now the multi-million dollar court case against James Hardy has ended mid-trial, leaving homeowners with nothing. More than 1,000 people were collectively seeking over $200 million against the cladding manufacturer, claiming Hardy Tech's cement and fibre cladding system caused problems including damp, mould and rot in their houses. But now there's been a settlement that's resulted in a payout for James Hardy and nothing for the claimants. It follows Harbour Litigation Funding, which was backing the homeowners, understood to have pulled the plug on its legal support. Adina Thorne, its legal and financial support. Adina Thorne is the lawyer who took the case on behalf of the affected homeowners. She says an inquiry into building products is urgently needed. I spoke to Adina Thorne just before we came on air. What happened? Why did the case end this way with the litigation fund having to pay $1.25 million to James Hardy? What happened?
Well, Catherine, that is a good question. So maybe I should step back. This proceeding has been running about 6 years, and it is a massive action by about 1,200 poor homeowners against seven James Hardy companies. It's been a huge fight. It's only been running while we've got Harbour Litigation Funding funding it. And for whatever reason that's outside my control and unfortunately the owner's control, there's been a decision made around us to no longer, you know, go ahead with this claim partway through the trial. I mean, to say it's an unfortunate event is, you know, putting it extremely lightly. But, you know, for the poor homeowners who I act for, we can only go anywhere if we've got funding. And this is part of, if you like, a three-way settlement with two enormous corporate giants, Harbour and James Hardy. So that's where we are. In terms of the money, that is confusing. So maybe I should explain that a little bit, Catherine. Not wanting to bore you, but if you're in like litigation of any kind and you want to, you know, get out of it partway through a hearing, basically you have to pay the other side money to do that because they've incurred a whole lot of costs. So here, at the point they wanted to exit, if you paid according to like the rules of the court, it would have been a number far exceeding $1.25 million if the court had set it. So there was an agreement to pay that sum that was reached, and you know James Hardy had put that out in the public arena, and that's the sum that Harbour had sitting in the High Court.
So essentially, the funder has pulled the plug, and James Hardy have agreed to likely a lower settlement on costs as part of the whole thing ending.
Well, in the first part, it's hard for me to say that Harbour pulled out, but Harbour is certainly no longer funding, putting it more neutrally. And definitely the sum of $1.25 million, I think, it's no question, is a lot lower number than has been set by the court. And it's also a fraction of, to the extent this matters, their real costs. I mean, I don't want to guess, Catherine, on their real costs, but, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they exceed $25 million. And they've got back 1.25. So it's no gain for them on a net basis, if that's what they're trying to say.
Is it just to be clear though? Just to be clear though, the reason the action has ended is at the instigation of the funder, Harbour Litigation Funding, correct?
I don't think I can say that, but I can. Obviously, a lot of stuff that's gone on here is commercially sensitive and confidential, and I can't comment on that. But I can say that the end point is a three-way settlement, and that involves Harbour.
What's the reaction been?
Well, I mean, you know, my focus here has always been, Catherine, on the poor owners. And, you know, when this first arose, you know, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible for these owners. And it was like a, you know, a scenario that, personally, I never thought was at all a likely scenario. I mean, to give you an idea, this trial was going pretty well. Like, I don't think, if you went to the High Court judge today, who's very, very good, Justice Christian Fotter, and you said to him, what do you think was going to happen here? I think he was still sitting on the fence when this trial stopped. I might be wrong, but that's my impression. I mean, it was a very tightly balanced trial. you know, there was nothing extraordinary that really happened in it. I don't think it was all very technical about, you know, heart effects. But, you know, the owners, you know, they're in this sort of three-way thing. So it's not just, they're not paying the bills here. And the attitude of the owners, I thought was going to be quite a lot of anger at the start. But it was real disappointment. And, you know, obviously that we've been through like a very detailed process with them of advice. And, I mean, gosh, they're hugely disappointed, as I would be. Their response to me...
Go ahead.
Their response to me has been, like, overwhelmingly supportive. I guess that's the most surprising thing I found. I mean, I've had a woman in a retirement village in Meadowbank write to me and say, who's 91, come and visit me. I've had people in the South Island who have offered me to stay in their houses. I've had, this morning I got up and there's three or four text messages from people who don't know me. I've had people message me on my Facebook page. I mean, I've had other lawyers contact me this morning. So, you know, it's very surprising. I find that quite overwhelming, the generosity of spirit out there. But I think the owner's view is really they can only go if they've got a funder. And that's kind of where it starts and ends for them.
How far did you get in court? I know it's a very complex case, but what were the key issues that were aired before you reached this point?
We had, that's a good question, we had closed calling all the plaintiffs, so all the owner's side evidence, and it was in a period of like a break of about a week or 9 days. So most of those witnesses had been through. So we'd heard from various experts around the world, Paul Bennett, who's in Colorado, a few Canadian experts, and Peter Lalas, who's in Sydney, about their views of why Huddy Text doesn't work. But, I mean, I would say they're part of it. I mean, we called something like, from memory, 30 experts, and about 10 owners gave evidence. I mean, massively detailed, complex case. I mean, we haven't heard, in fairness, we haven't heard anything from James Huddy's witnesses. And we'd heard, this case in part depended on like a group of houses. So we'd heard a lot about this group of houses, and there'd been a real battle on those houses, because the real difficulty in these cases is how much of it is caused by a defective product or an alleged defective product, and how much of it is installation. And that's the battleground.
Is it the product, or is it that you didn't follow the instructions when you used the product, and this is why one particular housing grouping, if you like, or housing complex was so much in play? When you say that...
And then you get to the limits of those arguments, which are really difficult. So I say, well, it's impossible to, you know, actually physically for a human to build to these details. To give you an example, some of them, I think, to actually do properly, you've got to have like a horizontal table on a building site where you put things together on the horizontal, and no builder works on the horizontal. They all work on the vertical, you know what I mean, standing up. So, I mean, at the edges of it, it's very, very difficult, because in my view, if it's systemic, then installation doesn't really come into it, but that's never something the defendant's going to accept. So the whole battleground of the trial was, you know, as being reported, is this a manufacturing, systemic, you know, system, or is it, are the builders to blame, basically?
So did I hear from you that James Huddy, we had not heard their side of the story in court before this ended?
We've heard... Largely correct. We've heard the opening, or their mini opening, which is a couple of days. We might have heard a couple of other. We've heard their cross examination of our witnesses, but they were about to call their, I don't know, 30 to 40 witnesses when this settled.
Okay.
So we're very much like half time of the All Blacks playing.
Half time, and the question is whether. The question is, and I pose it as a question.
Sure.
The person or the organisation providing the funding made a call on the likely outcome and the risks for them involved. That's the only rational conclusion I can reach from what I've read and heard.
And obviously part of that I can't comment on.
Okay.
What I can say is when you're a funder, there's two parts to it. One is, are you going to win this case? There's also things around that which, are very much funding things, which is how investable is this? What other investments have I got around the world? Do I want to be in the New Zealand market? What is the New Zealand dollar doing? COVID, et cetera. This funder that's in the public arena pulled out from funding the Shadow Cloud action, and it's no longer funding this action.
That raises an issue around the balance of risk for homeowners in getting involved with these funders. There's two other cases, we should say. There's two other claims still to be determined, but they're not at risk in the sense that they are financially going to be out of pocket in an upfront way anyway, because it's no win, no fee. However, the risk is that you're also not in control in some ways of other decisions the funder makes. That's up to them. And this is, I guess, the balancing act that people are going to have to make if they want to get involved with these funds. Do you believe they understood that fully in advance?
Yes, I do. But I do think, Catherine, what you're talking about, of this balancing act is very genuine concern that I share as well. Obviously, I've got a unique lens into all this. But I would say overall that, one, I think the Australian model where the funders are, I think they call them licensed, but there's a whole lot more controls. I think that's a no-brainer that we need that. I think we need to have cash security in the High Court, not funds overseas. I think in terms of joining these actions, I personally don't think people should be too put off joining them because they lose some of their decision-making power. Because, that is a deterrence, but equally they're not paying. I think it's very, though, incumbent on the solicitors and the barristers involved in these files to ensure they're getting proper instructions. So here I was quite lucky because I had two representatives who have spoken out. One of them is Leslie Wheatley, who's a homeowner who watched nearly the whole trial. That's an extraordinary feat by her. But it meant that I had somebody who gave me instructions many times a day who was all across it. And I think those people, those representatives, are absolutely key. When it was major stuff, sometimes we had to go out to the whole class, and that's a big job for a class this size. But what I would say to people is, certainly there's a lot of learning in this, but for most people, whether we like it or not, the only way they can get into the courts is through these funded actions. But in saying that, I do think that reform is a good thing. And I would say in a wider point, if I can, that I think this case also highlights that these building products, if you like, they've been sent out of my world for some time now. I am quite concerned about some of the building products that are coming into New Zealand. And so far, no government across the House, whether it's Labor or National, has come forward to really address building products in New Zealand in any meaningful way, in my view.
What should that be, Adina? If you're not going to rely on class actions,
I think there needs to be, and I've been saying this for some time, a proper independent review, whether it's a commission of inquiry or a government commission of inquiry or the like, led by truly independent people. So I'm talking about top architects, facade engineers, probably people like me who actually understands how these products work and what the risks are, but people like that, a panel of people who actually get into it like they did in these banking inquiries and insurance inquiries in Australia, because they're not really that suited to one judge, one poor judge sitting in a courtroom. Probably the courtroom is you get into all this sort of adversarial stuff, and it's not an inquiry, it's not the same thing as investigating something. And I think if this country is going, unfortunately, to have potential problems with buildings and houses for some time. We have an opportunity here to step up and go, actually, our home is, to most people, their biggest asset. We don't want any more, you know, questionable or, you know, whatever, products coming into New Zealand. We need to stop, look at what we're bringing in, work out what we actually want to bring in, and set up appropriate controls. And that investigation should start with the needs of the common person on the street, what he or she needs. What that normal person who's, you know, basically got no money at the end of the week because, you know, mortgages are so high in this country versus income. And it shouldn't be led by the big merchants. It shouldn't be led by the manufacturers. It should be led by these experts. And I don't think it would cost the country a whole lot of money. I think a border inquiry that might take 6 months, that would pay back in spades over the next, you know, probably century of this country. And I am blown away that it has not happened yet. We are still dealing with this major problem, house by house, not as a population. And remember, this is the biggest uninsured risk this country has ever had. You know, I was listening to a podcast the other day, you know, and I've been listening to President Obama and all this, and they say the biggest issues in the next century are going to be mental health and global warming. Well, I would say the third one in New Zealand is housing. Housing is the biggest problem this country has for most people.
That is Adina Thorne, who was the lawyer in court in that action that is now ended involving James Hardy and its particular one particular product. James Hardy released a statement after the settlement was reached, saying it believed the settlement supported the company's continued belief that the allegations lacked merit and that it had behaved as a responsible manufacturer. It says it remains sympathetic to homeowners negatively impacted by weather tightness issues.